Charge one. The OPG therefore finds the five affected members guilty as charged. In relation to charge to read it as follows. It is admitted that your ability of conduct constitutes in contempt of parliament in terms of section 33 of the act, in that the as a member of parliament and during questions to the president in the National Assembly on 21 August 2014, you willfully fail and or refuse to obey Rule 51 and Rule 51 read together of the rules of the National Assembly, in that you refuse to withdraw immediately from the chamber for the remainder of the day's sitting when you are ordered to do so by the Speaker. This act was leveled against the following elected members: Messrs. N. F. Shivambo, R. P. Ramakada, G. A. Gadi, Q. Rosi, J. S. Malema, and K. Litchfield Savalala. The committee deliberated on the charge, and 5 committee members found the 6 affected members guilty. 4 committee members found the affected members not guilty. In relation to charge 2, the committee therefore found the 6 affected members guilty as charged. Charge 3, it is alleged that you are guilty of conduct constituting contempt of parliament in terms of section 38 of the act, in that as a member of parliament and during questions to the president in the National Assembly on 21 August 2014, you contravened section 7B of the act by improperly interfering with or impeding the power by the member of his or her functions as a member in the following manner. When the Speaker requested that the B.H. Wolowisa, a member of parliament, to pose a question, a supplementary question to the president, no conduct prevented Mr. Wolowisa and other members of parliament who might have wished to ask the president further questions from asking their questions, thereby preventing them from performing one of their functions as a member of parliament, namely to hold their relationship to account by asking the president questions. This charge was leveled against the following elected members: Messrs. N. Archibambo, R. P. Ramagata, and Litchfield Shavala. The committee deliberated on this charge, and 7 committee members found the 3 affected members guilty. 1 committee member dissented, finding the affected members not guilty. In relation to this charge 3, the committee therefore finds the 3 affected members guilty as charged. In relation to charge 4, which stated as follows: it is alleged that you are guilty of conduct constituting contempt of parliament in terms of section 13C of the act, in that as a member of parliament and during questions to the president in the National Assembly on 21 August 2014, you willfully failed and or refused to obey Rule 49 of the rules of the National Assembly by failing to resume your seat when the Speaker rose while you were speaking or offering to speak, and thereby preventing the Speaker from being heard without interruption. This charge was leveled against the following affected members: Messrs. N. F. Shivambo and R. P. Ramakada. The committee deliberated on this charge, and 5 committee members found the 2 affected members guilty. 4 committee members found the affected members guilty. In relation to the charge 4, the committee therefore finds the 2 affected members guilty as charged. In relation to charge 5, which is stated as follows: it is alleged that you are guilty of conduct constituting contempt of parliament in terms of section 18C of the act, in that as a member of parliament and during questions to the president in the National Assembly on 21 August 2014, you willfully failed and or refused to obey Rule 72 of the rules of the National Assembly by speaking when you were not called upon to do so by the presiding officer, that is the Speaker, and or without the Speaker recognizing you. This charge was levied against the following affected members: Messrs. N. F. Shivambo, R. P. Ramakada, G. A. Gadi, J. S. Malema, and K. Litchfield Savalala. The committee deliberated on this charge, and the 6 committee members found the 5 affected members guilty. four other committee members from the affected members not guilty. Therefore, in relation to charge two, the committee finds that the five affected members guilty as charged. In relation to charge six, it is alleged that you are guilty of conduct constituting contempt of parliament in terms of section 13A of the Act, in that as a member of parliament and during questions to the president in the National Assembly on 21 August 2014, you contravened section 7E of the Act by creating or taking part in a deliberation of parliament while the House was meeting by inter alia shouting or banging on tables and or refusing to obey the speaker's instructions and or generally conducting yourself in a grossly disorderly manner, thereby interfering with or disrupting the proceedings of the House, forcing the speaker to suspend proceedings temporarily, and ultimately to adjourn the sitting for the day. And this charge was leveled against the following affected members, Mr. Sten F. Shimango, Abdurrahman Kata, G. A. Gadi, Q. Ndozi, J. S. Malema, M. S. Matiasu, K. M. Ndama, K. D. Shizawalala, E. N. Lo, R. N. Mashavela, and O. A. Maxson, and Honorable Musar. The committee deliberated on this charge, and the five committee members found the 12 affected members guilty. The three committee members found the affected members not guilty. In relation to charge six, the committee therefore finds the 12 affected members guilty of charge. In relation to charge seven, it is alleged that you are guilty of conduct constituting contempt of parliament in terms of section 13A of the Act, in that as a member of parliament and during questions to the president in the National Assembly on 21 August 2014, you contravened section 7B of the Act by improperly interfering with or impeding the exercise of performance by the National Assembly of its authority or function by remaining in the chamber after the sitting of the House had been temporarily suspended by the Speaker so that you could leave or tentatively be removed from the chamber in order for the House to continue with its business for that day. Your refusal to leave the chamber resulted in the House being adjourned for the day. The discharge was leveled against 20 affected members. The members are Messrs. N. F. Shimango, R. P. Ramakata, G. A. Gadi, Q. Ndozi, J. S. Malema, N. S. Matias, J. A. Ndama, B. Joseph, M. S. Mbata, Z. K. Murafela, K. Lishfield Chavalala, E. M. Lowe, R. N. Mashavela, O. H. Maxson, P. S. Sonti, S. Kaula, V. N. Gweniso, P. Ndongwa, A. Machoveni, and M. Munsan. The committee deliberated on this charge, and six committee members found all 20 affected members guilty. Two committee members found the affected members not guilty. In relation to the charge seven, the committee therefore finds all 20 affected members guilty as charged. Honorable members, I think there is that one correction on charge 5, that on charge 5, the committee therefore finds the five affected members guilty as charged. That is the law resolution on Monday, honorable members. Therefore, I wish to make this announcement. Honorable members, and on the 4th of November, the letters informing the affected members of the findings of the committee in regard to the allegations of conduct constituting contempt of parliament were emailed and handed delivered on the 5th of November. then they will have to deliver hard copy. The letters also inform the affected members that notwithstanding the fact that on the 7th of October 2014, they aligned themselves with the decision to withdraw from these proceedings, the committee was appointing them, in terms of item 9 of the schedule, to the next assembly rules, an opportunity to present the mitigating factors in respect of sanctions to the committee on the 7th of November 2014. That is today. They were also informed that they could make their representations in this regard, either in writing or verbally to the committee. In this regard, we have not received the annual return representation from the affected members. And also, we have not been informed whether they were present or not present, as we see that they are not present now. The letter that advised the affected members that should they not make the presentations in mitigation of sanctions, the proceedings would continue without their input. In the light of the absence, I now want to recognize Mr. Bakpour. If he has got any aggravating factors to present. Mr. Bakpour.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'd rather not have the presentation I am about to make be styled as the presentation to you and your committee of aggravating factors, but rather a survey of what I propose the committee ought to take into account as relevant factors that would inform its deliberations and ultimately the decision that it will take in respect of an appropriate penalty. Or penalties. I have prepared a brief document of some 20 pages, and with your leave, Mr. Chairman, I propose to hand up that document.
Is it a document in relation to proposed or recommended sanctions or aggravating factors?
It is a document along those lines.
On the proposed
on the proposed penalties, that's it.
Can I take that you don't necessarily have aggravating factors other than what you will incorporate, you talk about in the proposal?
Correct. That is my concern.
Okay. Honorable members, then we then get that the affected members are not here, and also our initiator doesn't want to take an opportunity to deal directly with tax aggravating factors, but as I'm hearing, he wants to raise them within the context of his presentation in relation to recommended sanctions for us to consider. Is that orderly, Honorable Members? Then, Honorable Mr. Falco, then you recognize that to her. Okay, I'll hold on a second. Mr. Falco, Honorable Filtan and Honorable Lothrid in that order. Let's start with Filtan.
Thank you. It may be that there's something I'm missing in the rules. My understanding was that the initiator would talk about aggravating factors. I don't know if he has got the leeway to talk to some factors generally. I seek clarity about that. Because my understanding is that he's limited to talk to aggravating factors. If we are at that stage, thank you.
Well, without really answering on his behalf, Honorable Sultan, he is actually not taking this opportunity now. But ever when there is aggravating or mitigating that was used on the committed function in the to check every charge. He may take both, and then, but I mean, you must remember that he is proceeding from the presentation that he received in in relation to the health of Aaron, where he actually believes that he has cooked the child. But he is not limited just only for aggravating or for mitigation in relation to the son. Then he is actually going to take that through his government. And only after he has completed that, then he will be aware of anything that he will take up for himself. Honorable Lord.
Thank you, Chair. It is a question in terms of procedure, and I hear what you're saying in the sense that the initiator is not now going to give any arguments in aggravation, but proceed to his proposals for penalties and thus also indicating them aggravating factors. But in terms of procedure, even though the accused members are not here, at what point would it be correct for any of us to express from our view in mitigating circumstances?
Well, honourable members, I'm sure the schedule is very clear that after the presentation of Mr. Van Voorn, then the committee members are going to talk to themselves. That is really how we dealt with the health fight and to convince each other whether we agree on a particular sanction, and then we'll level all the arguments, whether aggravating or mitigating from your side, and you may even alter some of the recommended sanctions that will be in front of you on the basis of your own discussion. So you must then present that discussion to yourself after Mr. Van Voorn has enjoyed addressing us on his document. If I could please that we move faster to get to Mr. Van Voorn. Can I start with Honorable Tillian and followed by Honorable Boyd? I hope you will be taking me back to Mr. Van Voorn.
I wanted to propose that Mr. Van Voorn continue because in terms of rules 9, paragraph 9, the initiative of the Ethics Committee on aggravating all other facts. So I think it's perfectly in line with the rules. Thank you.
Yes, you may follow Honorable Boyd.
This document is mostly a whole lot brief.
I do not wish to detain Mr. Chairman, you, the members of you and your committee beyond, I anticipate, a half an hour. The decision as to an appropriate or what the Act calls a sufficient penalty or penalties is one for the committee to make. But I think under this it is important that I canvass some issues with you. I do not propose to read every line, every word and phrase of the document that I distributed and prepared. The committee will have and can canvass and engage with the document as they see fit. Mr. Chairman, at that stage or phase of the inquiry and the work of this committee where the affected honourable members have now been found guilty of contempt, the contempt of which the honourable members have been found guilty is in my view, and I think this is supported by the evidence that serves before you, serious. It would not be an exaggeration or indeed a gilding of the lily to suggest that the allegations, or rather the contempt of which members have been found guilty, is serious. Just as an example, I can think of few more serious forms of contempt than to interfere with the right of another honourable member, for example, Mr. Honourable V.H. Olamisa, to ask a supplementary question. In similar vein, I can think of few more serious examples of contempt than creating or taking part in a disturbance of the house. I raise those two by way of introduction just as an example of the seriousness. Section 12 of the Act provides that the committee may impose a range of penalties. In fact, the Act provides in Section 12.5 that the committee may impose any one or more of the following penalties. And then Section 12.5 lists a range of penalties. Those penalties are a formal warning, a reprimand, and an order to apologize to Parliament or the House or a person in a manner determined by the House, the withholding for a specified period of the member's right to use or the enjoyment of any specified facility provided to members by Parliament, the removal or the suspension for a specified period of the member from any parliamentary position occupied by the member, a fine not exceeding the equivalent of 1 month's salary and allowances payable to the member concerned by virtue of the remuneration of public office bearers act, and lastly, the suspension of the member with or without remuneration for a period not exceeding 30 days, whether or not the House or any of its committees is scheduled to meet during that period. It is open to this committee to impose one or a combination of those possible penalties, because the wording of the Act there is rather clear. Impose any one or more of the following penalties, says the Act. Section 12.1 of the Act goes on to read, and I deal with this at page 4 of the submissions, that a member may not be suspended unless the House has found that the member is guilty of serious or repeated contempt, and none of the other penalties set out in the Act will be sufficient. And that relates to the suspension of a member from the House for periods as provided for in Section 12.5 of the Act. I think, of course, so, and this much is common cause arising from the evidence, that what is at play before the committee on the evidence that serves before it is not repeated contempt at this stage. If repeated contempt means that the members have previously made themselves guilty of contempt and have previously been found guilty of contempt, then maybe that phrase would come into play. But here we're talking about serious contempt. I would urge, and I would elaborate on shortly, that the contempt is indeed so serious as to warrant, in some circumstances, the most serious of penalties. There are a number of considerations which I think the committee ought to consider that might be relevant. Those considerations would include that I deal with these on page 5 of the document. Page 5 of the document at paragraph 10 through to 11.4. Those considerations would include the seriousness of the charges of contempt, of which the members have been found guilty, as well as the nature and severity of their conduct. Further, an acknowledgement of wrongdoing and remorse shown on the part of the named honourable members, as well as their cooperation in the work of the committee. Yet further, any previous incidents involving the named honourable members and the interests of Parliament. Dealing then with the seriousness of the charges. I think it is common cause that there can be no serious suggestion or finding that the contempt that the members have been found guilty is anything less than serious. I do not propose to impeach charge 1. I dealt with it in page 4 of the document. But it is that charge that deals with refusing to obey the instruction of the Speaker that the affected honourable members take their seats. The members involved in that activity who have been found guilty of that charge are the Honourable Chibambu, the Honourable Ramakapsa, the Honourable Litchfield, Sabalala, the Honourable Gardi, and the Honourable Ndlozi. There are 5 of the honourable members there. The purpose for which the Speaker issued the instruction that they take their seats is also quite important. It's not only about maintaining order in the House on the day, but it is to allow the process of questions and supplementary questions to proceed. The members knew that. The evidence has established that. There was no misunderstanding as to how the process works, supplementary questions, and the queuing of supplementary questions. That much, I would urge Mr. Chairman and the members of your committee, is not in doubt. Similarly, and if you get to charge 5, or rather charge 2, it is that charge that deals with the refusal to withdraw immediately from the chamber for the remainder of the day's sitting. The members, as you have indicated already, have been found guilty of that charge also. Charge 3 relates to the Speaker attempting to recognise the Honourable Olumisa and the members improperly interfering with the opportunity for the Honourable Olumisa to speak again, a very serious charge indeed. The affected members, specifically in relation to the charge as it relates to interfering with the attempt to recognise the Honourable Olumisa, knew that it was the turn of the Honourable Olumisa to speak. They understood that clearly. The evidence establishes that that was the case. On a number of occasions, the Speaker specifically sought to recognise the Honourable Olumisa. And as is the case in relation to the finding of contempt, not obeying the instruction to take your seat, it wasn't on one occasion that the members were ordered to do so. The evidence preserved before you establishes that there were at least a number of occasions. The fact that the members, notwithstanding a number of occasions, do not abide the rules of Parliament, do not abide the Speaker's instruction, do not abide the attempt to recognise the Honourable Olumisa, would in my view form an aggravating circumstance. They had every opportunity to mend their ways. No cause for thought, I would suggest, the evidence points to on the part of the honourable members, rather a persistent pursuit of or with a course of the Speaker had explained at the start of the session how the process of supplementary questioning works. The Speaker did so again midway through the first part of the session. The members through the mouth and person of the honourable Chibambu confirms we also have that book. We know the rules. Again, that would present itself, that being the evidence before you, as an aggravating circumstance. But while I'm on this score, the evidence preserved before this committee is rather plain and somewhat unexciting and unglamorous, but quite important when it comes to sanction. Parliament deems it fit to host and hold what is called an onboarding session. That happens early in the life, especially of the fifth parliament, when new and returning members are again familiarized with the rules for new members and attempt for them to get to know the rules and how parliament works. There can be no suggestion then that the members have been known about the rules, might have mended their ways and might have acted differently. Again, to my mind, I would think that would be an aggravating circumstance. Charge 4 relates, and I'm just doing a play sheet, a refusal to abide Rule 49 by failing to use legal sheet and writing whilst the speaker was still speaking, thereby preventing the speaker from being heard without interruption. So the idea as I deal with in the document, that too is a serious charge. Charge 5, and I'm trying to move through these as quickly as possible, when we get to charge 5, which is that charge, by honourable members who spoke when they were not called upon to do so or without being recognised by the speaker. The members there being the Honourable Shivambu, the Honourable Ramkasha, the Honourable Richard Chabagala, the Honourable Garvey, and the Honourable Malema. I'm now at page 11 of the document. After that, Mr. Chairman and the members of your committee, we get to charges 6 and 7. Charge 6, the Gashavit being creating or taking part in a disturbance within the precinct of Parliament whilst the House was meeting. And charge 7, summarised at the top of page 13, remaining in the chamber after the sitting had been temporarily suspended by the Speaker. The document deals with rumour of the honourable members have been found guilty of those various charges. Mr. Chairman, you also dealt with that in recording the resolution or decision of your committee a few minutes ago. In relation to charge 7, or rather charge 6, creating or taking part in a disturbance, as is recorded at paragraph 13 of 6.3 and at page 12 of the document, the affected members conducted themselves in a grossly disorderly manner. The conduct of the affected members, I would submit, was intentional and deliberate. Had it been properly put that the members might have been engaging in a robust or healthy debate, it is possible that one would then think that would be a mitigating circumstance that would urge maybe a less severe penalty. But on the rather straightforward fact observed before this committee, the conduct was persistent. The conduct didn't allow any other voices to be heard, and certainly not any other voices disagreeing with the conduct of the affected honourable members. That kind of conduct in itself would warrant a very, very serious penalty indeed. The evidence that serves before this committee, Mr. Chairman, and I'm now at paragraph 14, establishes that the nature, paragraph 14, also page 14, the nature of the contempt of the honourable members was serious. It has been described by witnesses who made evidence before this committee as unprecedented in Parliament. I respectfully submit that the evidence that serves before the committee confirms that the cumulative effect of the conduct of the affected members was so grave that Parliament could not continue with its business on 21 August 2014. That too presents itself as an aggravating circumstance. The seriousness of the contempt and its consequences warrant, I would suggest, a sufficiently serious penalty or penalties. The hearing commenced with the affected members present, and before entering a plea, and I'm now at page 15, and under the heading acknowledgement of serious acknowledgement of wrongdoing or remorse on the part of the members, the committee commenced its work. The affected honourable members were present here on the 7th of October. They left before entering a plea. The chairman of the committee entered a plea of not guilty on their behalf. The committee proceeded with its work on the various days of the session. Mr. Chairman, why should it be so that the affected honourable members could not be compelled to remain and to participate in the work of the committee? One of the consequences of their election is that they have not presented any mitigating factors in certain circumstances. And the committee is now left with having to make a decision absent such evidence from the affected members. This does not mean that the committee might not itself think that there might be, in the evidence that serves before it, factors that would point to a less severe, a less severe sanction. But one of the factors that would present itself as an aggravating circumstance, Mr. Chairman, would be a lack of acknowledgement of a wrongdoing, would be a lack of a showing of remorse. The members who are not guilty of contempt do not come before this committee and say, I have erred, but I have an explanation. They do not come before this committee and say, I have erred, but it was triggered by the following factors. They do not come before this committee and say, I have erred, but I have acted out of frustration. None of that forms part of the evidence that serves, before the committee. Rather, what does serve before this committee is the honourable members arriving on the 7th of October and leaving this committee after having made any number of claims, some of them unfounded, but also indicating very clearly that they would not, and I do not wish to propose to summarise, but they'd rather not participate in the continued work of the committee for the reasons given by the members in the presentation of the Honourable Malema on their behalf. In the result, Mr. Chairman, what we face today is a group of members found guilty of serious contempt under the rules of the National Assembly. And the committee would do well to remember that those rules are rules that the National Assembly has collectively imposed, or the members of the National Assembly have collectively imposed on themselves, willingly and voluntarily. The absence or the lack of any acknowledgement of any wrongdoing whatsoever would present itself in the ordinary course as an aggravating circumstance. It is, of course, so, Mr. Chairman, that the committee must then also consider whether there have been any previous instances of a similar sort involving the affected honourable members. And I deal with this in paragraph 24. Whilst it is the case that the affected honourable members have not, prior to 21 August 2014, conducted themselves in a similar fashion in the National Assembly, it is respectfully submitted that that factor is outweighed by the serious nature and the severity of their conduct. Contempt and conduct of which the members have been found guilty was intentional and deliberate. Notwithstanding earlier cautions by the Speaker during the session on 21 August 2014 and having a time for reflection and to reconsider their conduct, the affected members persisted with their conduct. And that conduct included acting in a gravely disorderly manner and in a gravely contemptuous manner. I should add at this point that the affected honourable members also acted in defiance of the Sergeant-at-Arms. It was Ms. Lobby, as the Sergeant-at-Arms, who gave evidence before your committee, Mr. Chairman, and said that on previous occasions when a Speaker of the National Assembly had called upon the Sergeant-at-Arms to remove members from the House, it was never necessary for her to approach the very bench of the affected honourable member, but rather the minute or soon after she rose from her bench to carry out the Speaker's instruction, the affected honourable member would leave the House, not in this case. The conduct was so far as to act in defiance of the Sergeant-at-Arms in her attempt to remove the affected honourable member. The committee will also consider the interests of Parliament and, I would suggest, the public at large. Those interests are advanced by orderly and robust debate and engagement. I respect which of them, that the conduct of the affected members was destructive of orderly and robust debate in America. I further respect which of them, that the conduct of the affected members on 21 August 2014 had about it the hallmarks of a designed and concerted effort to, amongst other things, disrupt the proceedings of the House. It can never properly be thought that the interests of Parliament are advanced by such conduct. There are then some further considerations, Mr. Chairman, dealt with at paragraphs 26, 27 and 28. I already alluded to them, the honourable members, or rather through the person of Mr. Shivamu, it was made clear that we have dealt with this issue of the rules. We have got that book as well. We know those things. That's the evidence that serves before the committee. And this ties in with the fact of the onboarding session, an orientation process, I suppose, where the members, being new members of this House, all if not some, or most of them, had an opportunity to familiarize themselves with the rules, including the rules of debate, and how they were to conduct themselves in the chamber, in the chamber of the National Assembly. There is no evidence before this committee that there's been previous and comparable incidents, such as those which transpired on 21 August 2014. I say this because Mr. Carswell was asked by a member or members of your committee whether this had not happened before, and there was a suggestion that when there was pains, for example, in the form of an IOT violence to Ishi Kosha, when somebody says from the gallery or the floor, Dayuonga, and others joining that, that is pains. It is not disturbance. It is not discussion. When there is breaking out in song, appropriate at times, that is not disruption, that is not disturbance. There is not a jot of evidence before this committee of any previous and comparable incidents, such as those which transpired on 21 August 2014. As the witnesses have said, at least two of them. The events of 21 August 2014 are unprecedented. One of the witnesses said that members who were gathered in V16, being the chief whip's boardroom, also expressed the view that they could not be held ransom by the conduct of a few honourable members. In the light of all of those factors, Mr. Chairman, there are potentially three groups, well not potentially, there are three groups of members. The first being Group A, I'm again now drawing back to the map of charges, which forms part of the workings of this committee. The first being Group A. That group is made up of the Honourable Chivamu, the Honourable Rakasa, the Honourable Israel Shabalala, the Honourable Gardi, the Honourable Ndlozi, and the Honourable Malema. Each of these members has been found guilty of various charges of misconduct. I'm now dealing with page 18 of the submission, and paragraphs 33, 34, and 35. The charges of, or the contempt of which these members are guilty, taken individually, would warrant a serious penalty. For example, creating or making part in a disturbance in the House would warrant a very serious penalty. I would submit that multiple and deliberate acts of serious contempt would warrant an appropriately serious penalty or penalties. Anything short of sufficiently serious penalties would signal that the rules of the National Assembly, which rules the members of the National Assembly are collectively imposed on themselves, may be ignored, may be observed only in the breach, and may be transgressed without fear or concern of serious consequences. I further submit that such an approach is not only inappropriate, but wholly impermissible. A finding of multiple contempt on any number of charges of a very serious nature would, to my mind, warrant the most serious of possible sanctions. to adopt the least serious of possible sanctions is not, properly speaking, or regularly permissible on the facts that serve before this committee. The workings of this committee, as all of life's great stories, must begin and end with the facts. Those facts stand before you, Mr. Chairman, and members of your committee, unchallenged. Then there is a group B. Before I go to group B, the possible sanctions, and I've alluded to the most serious of sanctions as being a permissible sanction, the possible sanctions or penalties, however, I have dealt with at paragraph 7 and at pages 3 and 4 of the submissions. The most serious, of course, is the detention of a member without remuneration for a period not exceeding 30 days, whether or not the House or any of its committees is scheduled to meet during that period. The lightest of possible sanctions is a formal warning. Move to group B. This group is composed of the Honourable Lowe, or comprised of the Honourable Lowe, the Honourable Masavera, the Honourable Matilashe, the Honourable Maxson, the Honourable Munsami, and the Honourable Mbutama. I think it's Mr. Angile Mbutama. These members, being members of group B, have been found guilty of two charges of contempt. Individually, those charges are serious. Contempt in the form of collecting or taking part in a disturbance is in and of itself a very serious form. Contempt in that form would necessarily warrant a sufficiently serious penalty or penalties. When taken together with the other contempt of which these members in group B has been found guilty, being impeding the exercise of performance by the House of its authority by remaining in the chamber after the sitting had been suspended, it is very serious indeed. Mr. Chairman, I respectfully submit that an appropriately serious penalty is warranted in these circumstances. The members acted intention. The members were not open to persuasion. No amount of pleas, and I use the word here, a plea is the word used by the sergeant of arms, Ms. Mishlomi. No amount of plea by Ms. Mishlomi would persuade the members otherwise. No amount of reasonable intervention had the effect of the members reconsidering their conduct. Had it been the case that the facts that served before you would include something along the following lines, the members occupied the chamber for some time. The sergeant at arms approaches them shortly after their occupation begins. The sergeant at arms following an engagement with them reports to the speaker and others in the house. Madam Speaker, we are now 10 minutes into the occupation of the chamber, remaining in the chamber, and please inform you that the Honourable Member say that they will leave the chamber. Had that been the facts before you, then there might be some suggestion, some thread, some texture of mitigating matters. But those are not the facts before you. As inconvenient as the facts before you are, we cannot imagine salvaging facts. We might imagine solely circumstances, but the facts are what they are, unglamorous, unexciting, but they propel an appropriate and reasonable conclusion. That appropriate and reasonable conclusion, I would urge, is that a sufficiently serious penalty is called for. Again, to impose too light a penalty would be sending the wrong message in relation to rules of the House voluntarily imposed by the members collectively upon themselves. with the last group, Group C. This group is made up of the Honourable Joseph, the Honourable Kaula, the Honourable Machogani, the Honourable Mbata, the Honourable Moratela, the Honourable Aniso, my apologies for the spelling error at paragraph 39, the Honourable Aniso, the Honourable Tobongwana, and the Honourable Sonki. These members have been found guilty of the last of the charges, being charged, what we refer to in the document as charge 7, and that is remaining in the chamber after the proceedings of the House have been temporarily suspended. Their conduct is, however, both cumulatively and in its nature and extent, different from the conduct of the other groups. I would urge, Mr. Chairman, and the members of your committee, that you be mindful of that fact. That is a circumstance and a fact that must be taken into account in the consideration and the formulation of an appropriate penalty. This is that group C, which has not also risen one after another so as to interfere with the speaker's attempt to recognize the Honourable Holomisa. This is that group C, which did not one after the other rise so as to speak when not being recognized to speak or being called upon to do so or rising on a point of order. And so their facts and circumstances are indeed different, and I think the committee would properly take that into account. Nonetheless, the contempt of which these members in Group C have been found guilty is serious contempt and warrants a sufficiently serious penalty.
Conclude on the penalties
there has been a presentation on the kind of penalties that are thought to be appropriate, and the range of penalties as contained in the Act. We're not going to just go into bushes and just seek penalties there. The Act is very clear on the kind of penalties that will be going on, and as contained in the presentation that has been made. Honourable members, I think for us to be able to discuss the specific document, we'll then go to a closed session. For us to be able to discuss this particular document and reach a conclusion, and then come back here and indicate what are your final conclusions on this particular analysis. Can I hear on my proposal? Honorable Dalla.
Chair, your proposal is accepted, Chair, that the panel must then go to a small meeting and have a discussion on the report presented by Mr. Franco and then take a final decision. And I think we should do that, Chair, because we have to read the report.
Thank you, honorable members. Now, we are definitely going to use the same room. Honorable Kildan.
Thank you, Chair. This is my first of success.
I regret that we went into a closed session when we were here by raising upon the banks. Once more, I want to raise some objections to the fact that we're going to a closed session at this point in time for the same reasons that we deny the public the opportunity of getting fresh knowledge of what is happening and to consider this matter.
Thank you very much for your input, and I'm sure that the content of your input. I think you do realize that you have made this anyway. It has been defeated in the past, and then for purposes of procedural issues that would impact the working of the committee, I think that argument, I think it has been entertained before, and then and it has been defeated before in the same point. I think that what needs to happen, honorable members, is that we are just going to be unfriendly. We are just going to be unfriendly to request the members of the public when we start the discussion on this, then to excuse us. We're going to use the same room, but then also the recording of what we are doing, it will be done with the internal equipment that doesn't feed directly to the public during this time of the discussions on this matter. Honorable members, then I think we need to break and then proceed. And then we should be able, I think it's a 12 o'clock, to have a Zoom. Not 12 o'clock, 11. Yes, 11. Honorable members, I think what's going to happen is that actually at 11 o'clock, the key that is actually made, and the building that you have, yes, and then you need to break 5 minutes only. Is that the feeling, honorable members?
Okay.
And now it's with another 5 minutes and then okay, let's keep ourselves 10 minutes as I believe we'll be coming there.